Blog Talk Radio.
This is the Horse Radio Network.
What a beautiful day for horses in the morning.
Howdy, everybody. I am Glenn the Geek from Ocala, Florida.
And I'm Jamie Jennings from Phoenix, Arizona, and you're listening to Horses in the Morning on the Horse Radio Network for May 10th, 2012, episode 401. Good morning, Horse World.
Hold on. I'm here.
Good morning.
It's Thursday.
Kick the tires and light the fires, Big Daddy.
Your presence is required on the command deck.
Well, thank God I just opened the door to look outside and things are actually calm. It is nice and calm. But the weirdest thing happened yesterday in Phoenix, Arizona. Two haboobs coming from opposite sides of the city converged and created mass chaos in the Phoenix area yesterday. So much so that it wasn't even predicted. I had done the hourly forecast. You know, my students were supposed to get here at 4:30. And right about 4:10, I think it was, that the nothing was coming. The sky went black. The wind started whipping. Rain was coming sideways. Not much rain, mind you, but a little bit of rain. It was coming sideways, and it was absolute craziness.
It was sort of like a haboob joust over Phoenix.
Exactly. It was crazy. And so we actually were on our way home trying to get to the house. Chad was with me, and we're trying to get to the house. We're like, we have to put the chickens away. We have to put the chickens away. So we get home, and fortunately, the chickens actually went into the coop by themselves because they're smart. The horses are running around like crazy, you know. By the time I get home, all of our patio furniture is in the pool. The tree branches are in the pool. There's stuff is everywhere. Like the waterers that weren't completely full, because I use the big giant muck tubs for waterers, were knocked over and blown away out of the horse's stall. I mean, it was just a total mess. But I must tell you, the one thing that came out of the whole haboob thing that is freaking me out more than anything that you could imagine. Are you ready?
I'm ready. I have no idea.
I don't know what to do. I need our listeners' help. So I go into Jet's stall, and there's a baby bird laying on the ground. Now, super featherless bird. It's got feathers on it, but it got blown out of the nest and fell down and broke its leg. Because I just ran in there because Jet was coming in the stall, and I was like, oh, no, it's like a shark going to, you know, the chum. I was like, get the baby bird quick. So I run in, I pick up the baby bird, and he's got, like, a total broken leg, and it's dangling to the side. And the wind was so heavy, and, oh, my gosh, the mom and dad were flying up above me, circling, screaming at me like I was the worst thing in the world. But I just thought, I've got to help this little baby bird. So I get the baby bird, and I'm like, well, let me put it back in its nest. There's no way you could put it back in its nest because there was, like, 60-mile-an-hour gust of wind. He's just blown right back out. I mean, he almost blew out of my hand. So I put him in a bucket. I brought him inside, and he's now inside the house. And I've been feeding him. He's a baby grackle, and I Googled what to feed a baby grackle, and pretty much everything that I thought was wrong. So now I'm just giving him scrambled eggs, and he's so cute. He actually puts the face up and opens his beak, and you just shove it right down in his mouth. I'm not regurgitating it or anything, but it's so cute. But
you know what you feed
a
baby? What am I
supposed to do?
Cool with the broken leg.
What?
You feed it to face.
I, You dropped out, Glenn. Say that again.
You feed it to Frank. That's what you feed a baby grandpa.
I'm not feeding the bird to my cat. It's not. The thing is, Glenn, that, you know, that's very husbandly of you to say, because Chad's like, it's going to die. It's going to die. It's a baby bird with a broken leg. It's going to die. And I was like, well, that's fine. But it's not going to die by me leaving it here. It's going to die in the house with me trying to save it. That is just what's going to happen. And so we were sitting around having dinner last night after everything had calmed down. I made some dinner and we're sitting there eating over the table, and no TV was on. It's just us sitting quietly, and all of a sudden you start hearing, ah! 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 Chad's like, excuse me, is the bird in the freaking house? Like, what do you want me to do with it? I don't know. I don't want this bird in the house. And I'm like, he'll quiet down. He'll quiet down all night. Ah! Ah! I was like, oh my
God. Telling you, at about midnight, that bird would have been Frank's late night snack.
Yeah. Dude, you talk tough. Jennifer, would he have ever done something like that? Not a chance, right?
Glenn would have insisted the bird was out of doors. Absolutely. Yes.
I probably wouldn't have fed it to Frank, but I would have put it out of doors, and then it would have been his problem at that point. Because we had about 10 outdoor cats, so that would have been tough. They would have been beating the box.
So,
is the bird still alive this morning? Is it still alive?
Yes, it's still alive. I fed it eggs before the show. It's crazy.
That's kind of a cruel irony, isn't it?
Isn't feeding it eggs a little bit of cannibalism there, girlfriend?
Yes.
Hello?
Trust me, the whole thing was disturbing enough to me. But when I Googled what to feed a baby grackle, that is what they said their favorite food would be. Now, of course, immediately what I do is I get like some water and I soak some bread in it so the bread's dripping. And I go to, as I'm going to get the bird, I have my iPhone open. And the first thing they say is, do not feed the bird bread and water. All right, back to the kitchen we go. What do
you need to feed him worms?
Feed it? Yeah, Jennifer, let me tell you the odd. It did say that. They said, you know, what you need to do is you need to go out there and you get some grub worms and you pinch off the heads, or you get some crickets and you pinch off the heads and the legs. Yeah, that's not happening. Let me
you
just tell you right now.
You can buy crickets at PetSmart, by the way. You can buy crickets at PetSmart, just to let you know.
Do they come with the heads pinched off? I don't think so. I ain't pinching any heads off.
I wonder why you have to pinch the heads off. Maybe the heads are too hard to digest?
I don't know. I didn't really have any follow-up information, but let me just tell you that cooking a scrambled egg is about all that bird's going to get. Now, what I was thinking is, can I take the bird back out today since it's not windy and put it back up in its nest? Does any listener have any idea what to do? Now, I did read that the whole, once you touch it and you put it back, the parents don't reject it. That's totally false.
Oh, really? I always thought that was true. Is that an old wives' tale?
It's an old wives' tale, apparently. So maybe I'll try to put him in the nest. Maybe mom and dad will come back and take care of him. If not, we got a bird, honey.
Poor Chad. Poor Chad. I feel bad for the poor guy. Did it really stay in the house all night screaming?
Well, at one point in the middle of the night, I did go in there and close the door and then put a towel at the bottom of it. So trying to block out the noise. But it wasn't screaming like in a, it didn't sound like sad. It just sounded like it was calling its parents. And it's just, it just breaks your heart. I'm like, I want to put you out there, but I can't. Okay, you'll die. So it's like one of those things when you tell your horse, listen, I know better than you. Put this on. I know you hate your fly mask, but it's going to be good for you. So you will sit here and you will deal with it. So what I want to say to the bird, like, listen, trust me. I know what I'm doing. No, I don't.
Oh, God. All right, Jennifer, what's coming up on today's show?
On today's Thursday, we wish it was the weekend edition. Glenn and Jamie will be filling us in on all of the freaky, fun, and fantastic happenings in the horse world, including the latest and greatest from Queen Z's crib. That's right. Charles, the world's most famous broodmare manager, is here with the inside scoop from Lane's End. And to finish our edutainment experience on fencing, Jason from Field Guardian Fence Systems returns with some amazing fence how not to stories. Some of the stuff that people have to try to do with their fencing and the stories he has will just knock your socks off. So stay tuned for the fracas, folks.
All right. Thank you, Jennifer. I have a daily, or you have a daily, Winifer.
Yes. My daily Winnie goes to just this awesome story. NBC and Boyd Martin get my daily Winnie because, oh my gosh, they had their Boyd Martin and Neville Bardos were on NBC's Rock Center last night. It was awesome. What an incredible story. And it was delivered actually like, as a horse person, watching this whole thing and watching this guy who really doesn't know that much about horses talk about the horse, it did not bother me. There was not like one moment I was like, oh, what are you talking about? That's not the way it is. It was actually awesome. The whole thing, while going around through the story of Neville and the fire, just going through how he saved him in the first place and then he saved him in the fire and only paid like $1,000 for him and now the horse is worth, you know, $500,000 and the things that he does and quirks about his personality. It was really, really, really a great segment. What you did find out at the end of the interview, they have sold the movie rights to the Neville story. There's going to be a movie about
I guess that was only a matter of time, huh? Wow.
What a great idea. I never even thought of that, though. But having, can you imagine a movie about an inventor, Boyd and Neville? Oh, my gosh, it's so cool. So apparently they had to be careful of what they said because the rights have already been sold. It's awesome. So excited.
Huh. Interesting. I didn't know that. Wow, cool. So we haven't watched it yet, so we're going to have to watch it, huh?
Yes, if you want, Jen, I sent Jennifer, so you don't have to filter through anything. I sent Jennifer a link to Eventing Nation, has the whole video up on there, and all you have to do is click play, it goes through a commercial or whatever, and then plays the whole video. It's 11 minutes long, so, you know, but totally worth every second. It didn't even, it seemed like it was 4 minutes long from how it's interested you get in it immediately, obviously.
Cool. Very good. Well, I kind of have a follow-up to that daily, Winnie. Danny Reuter posted on our Facebook page, I just chose to watch the Neville Bardos special over Modern Family, and it was the right decision. Thanks so much for posting this on Facebook, or I would have missed it. They said at the end that the rights to the movie have been sold, and I am relying on you guys to keep me updated on this. Well, that's a lot of pressure, first of all, Danny, but we definitely will. We'll keep you updated every step of the way as we learn what's going on over there in the Boyd camp with a big movie. Think it's going to be a big production or like an independent film? Is it going to be the next War Horse? Seabiscuit? Neville Bardos. What will be the title? We'll have to come up with a title, Jamie.
As long as it's not Sylvester, you know, the last eventing movie that was made, which by its own merit was cute and I loved it as a kid. But I want like a hard hitting, serious movie about, you know, like I want to cry. By the way, in the video with Boyd on the NBC segment, just definitely mascara alert because there's just something about watching a grown man cry and he loses it.
And you did too.
Oh my gosh, of course. Of course. I can't watch a man cry. It makes me cry every single time.
All right. Thank you very much for that report on the Neville Bardos thing. You can go over and watch it at eventingnation.com. Hey, and thank you, Danny, for chiming in. I think it's the first time I've seen her pop in to the Facebook page.
Oh,
speaking about popping in, we are attempting a new thing today called a chat room. And because Facebook has redesigned their site to make it almost unusable and very difficult for our listeners to chat with each other, it used to be so easy to do that, and now it's not so easy anymore. We thought we would try the Blog Talk Radio chat room feature, which they have available to us. And I posted a link on Facebook to get to it. Otherwise, you can go to Blog Talk, if you're not on Facebook, you can go to blogtalkradio.com. And you'll find Horses in the Morning listed there on the current episodes. Click on that, and you're going to come to the page that has our show and also the chat room down below. Sumiko's in there already. Welcome, Sumiko. And she actually is typing in and says, love the Neville Bardos piece. I hope that they get the storybook Olympic gold end for that movie they're making. That would be nice if he won the gold this year at the Olympics with that horse. So Sumiko's in there waiting with, so you can check it out if you're sitting around your computer and you have time to get this open and chat with the other listeners during the show. We're going to give this a try for a couple of weeks, see if people are interested in doing it, and see how it works out. So, again, I posted a link on Facebook or go to blogtalkradio.com and just click on Horses in the Morning, and you'll see the chat room down below our show. And what else there, Jamie? Oh, really bad ads. We have the prize this week. It's a Dr. Rose's Remedies gift pack. Dr. Rose's Remedies are the salves and ointments that really do help when you get little cuts and scrapes or rashes, things like that on your horse or yourself. I use it on myself for that matter. We have some around the house at all times for the horses. So if your horse gets a cut or, you know, clips himself, that kind of thing, Dr. Rose's Remedies works terrifically. And we're giving away a Dr. Rose's Remedies gift pack. You can find out more about that at drrosesremedies.com. Jamie, tell everybody how easy it is to find really bad ads.
Well, let's see. Craigslist.com, go. The farm and garden section. Piece of cake. Every time I click on it, it's really sad, but you can look at the titles and know, like, if the title, you don't even have to click on it. If the title says, well, broke, fantastic, young, event prospect, blah, blah, you know, don't click on it. But if it says, Quater House for the number 4, sale with 2 E's, click on that, because that is going to be a good one. Am I right?
Terrific.
Am I right?
Yep, yep. You're right. You're right. And it takes literally 5 minutes to find 8 of them. I mean, it takes
and then you
no
win prizes.
Yep.
Yeah, and then you win prizes.
No time at all. So I see Susan Nelson's posting on Facebook. Hop into the chat room, too, Susan. Would be happy to see you over there.
Can you guys, am I here? Can you still hear me?
I think I'm here, and I think what happened is Jennifer dropped off this time. So, but I think we're still here, and I do think Jennifer dropped off. So send your ads to Jennifer@horseradionetwork.com. Get them in today, because Really Bad Ads Day is tomorrow. Now, what else here? We have a bunch of news.
Can I just mention the fact that, oh my God, Charles is coming on the show today to talk about Lane's End and Baby Zenyatta, and I'm so excited.
You hardly ever text me about guests, but yesterday I got a text that Charles was coming on the show.
Yes, I harassed him enough to where he's like, fine, just fine. But, I can't wait. I'm super excited about it.
And that was very funny because I'm sure he did it just to get you. You're like a stalker. You're probably the only stalker he has.
I doubt that. I mean, you know, seriously, he I am not the only one who is. Well, maybe I am, but that's okay. It's okay. He tolerates me very well, and he's going to come on the show today, so it can't get worse than that. It's perfect.
All right. And that's coming up at 10 o'clock. We'll hear more about Zenyatta and the baby and the new baby, both babies.
Yes, we will. When do you want to tell me this story? Because you've been totally holding it over my head. A story that is about, it's basically a rescue. Do you want to go over that one now?
Yeah, this is a first for us. We've done a lot of weird horse stories on the show here in the last year. But the title, this is what caught me. You talked about titles on Craigslist. Well, this title on the internet caught me. Attempted downtown carriage jacking foiled by horse. Now, wouldn't you open that up and read it? We've never had a carriage jacking story. Now, I don't care about how you feel about having carriages, you know, the carriage rides in the cities. This comes out of St. Louis, not New York. But there was this guy who was this carriage driver. He was done with his shift. It was about 8:30 in the evening, starting to get a little dark in St. Louis. And he's taking his horse and carriage back to the stable. His long day is done. And this guy, 40-year-old Johnny Medina, started following the carriage. And then all of a sudden, he jumps up on the carriage and he hits the driver over the head with a cane. Now, I don't know if the 40-year-old, you know, uses a cane. I don't know where the cane came from, but he hits the driver over the head with the cane. The driver decides it's probably the best thing to get off because he's being beaten with this cane. So he jumps off to try and get help from bystanders. And apparently he tells one of the bystanders, oh, don't worry, because at that point the horse had gotten spooked. And the horse did what horses do when they're spooked. What do, Jamie? They gallop down the road with the carriage.
Yeah.
So now picture this. They bolt. So this guy jumps up, whacks the driver over the head with the cane, and the driver jumps off, the horse bolts, and there this guy is who's carriage jacking with the horse that's out of control. And the driver apparently said to these bystanders, oh, we'll just go follow him because there's only one place that horse is going. And where was that, Jamie?
Back to the barn, Glenn.
Back to the barn. So apparently the horse is bolting, galloping down the middle of the road, trying not to get hit by a car, apparently. And the horse went immediately where they thought the horse would go. He pulled into the lot at the St. Louis Carriage Company near Busch Stadium, and he actually hit one of the trolleys in the parking lot. This guy apparently gets off. He wasn't right in the head. I'm thinking alcohol or drugs are involved. This Medina guy gets off and starts to hit the horse. Well, at that point, bystanders subdued him, and I'm sure that was pleasant, until the police arrived and arrested him. And he's now charged with second-degree robbery and third-degree assault and is in jail on $30,000 cash bond. And the driver said he was psychotic. Harry did good. So apparently Harry the horse saved the day in St. Louis.
Okay.
He got a ride he wasn't counting on.
Way to go, Harry the horse. Now, let me just back this train up a little bit, because what kind of stoned, drunk, fool, idiot do you have to be to try to steal a carriage? Who carriage jacks? I mean, Amish people don't even do that.
Exactly. I totally agree. By the way, I got to do, before we go on, I got to welcome Robert Dunn and Rick Conley to the chat room, too. Welcome, guys. So it's good to see more people popping in there. So that was
you're in charge of that.
I saw that this morning, Jamie. When I saw attempted downtown carriage jacking followed by horse, I knew I had the story of the day. You can't beat that with any of your stories. Sorry.
You really can't. Although I do have a really fun Kentucky Derby story for you here. Mario Gutierrez, who was the Derby that rode. Go ahead. Tell me the horse's name.
Oh, let me see. Hold on. I have it here. I'm trying to remember. What was that horse?
I'll have another. Takes the lead in the Derby. And up the line. I'll have another. Wins the Derby.
That was his name.
Bad horse. That was his name. I'll have another. 25-year-old Mario Gutierrez was basically an unknown jockey before the Kentucky Derby. He spent time in Canada. He spent a lot of time in Los Angeles. And riding at Santa Anita, but not in the top tier of the jockey. So winning the Kentucky Derby has propelled this guy to the top of the who's who in the jockey world. So apparently he actually yesterday got to go to the Dodgers game, and he threw out the first pitch at the Dodgers-Giants game last night. So very cool for him. He was standing on the front slope of the mound, threw it over the plate to Matt Traynor, and my old Kentucky home actually played on the organ, which that never happens. As this is going on, the stretch run of the Kentucky Derby was played on the board back behind center field. So everybody was cheering. Everybody was crazy. When he was wearing he was actually on the field wearing a blue jersey with Santa Anita on the front. So he wasn't wearing the Dodgers jersey, but he was wearing Dodgers colors. And he's standing there, and I guess the interview, he said that things have certainly changed. After the Kentucky Derby, he had two cell phones. He said so many messages, he lost count. He actually was at the Lakers playoff games doing interviews on Tuesday night. He hasn't gotten any sleep. He said that his mother has got more phone calls than she could imagine after winning the Derby. And he said, my mom said I've been all over the news in Mexico. So he's like the Mexican hero now. And I love it because he's flying on to to Pimlico on Tuesday to get ready for that other race. And he now says that
what's the next race again? Pimlico. Let me think. What would that be? That'd probably be the Preakness.
Half horse, half man, with beer in hand, he strolls the infield best.
Yes, that would be the race. So he is on his way to Pimlico, and I can't even finish my story now. So he's on his way. He says that he's done with all this craziness. He needs to get back focused to race. But good for him for being the hero in Mexico. His mom's super excited for him. He got to throw out the first pitch in the Derby game. And this never would have happened if he hadn't won a horse race. So good for him.
Well, terrific. And, you know, we're getting a lot of news in the horse world. We had that piece on NBC last night about Neville Bardos and Boyd Martin. And then in the New York Times this morning, a teenage horse girl got on there. She's 17 years old, Reed Kessler. We've talked about her before. She is the one that took show jumping by storm down in Florida this summer by winning the Nationals. Actually, she tied for the win of the Nationals. And they did a whole article about how she's 17 years old. To be in show jumping in the Olympics, apparently the minimum age requirement is 18. She turns 18 just like a couple days before the London Games begin. So she would be qualified, and the whole article was on how she is trying to qualify her two horses. Right now in the United States long list, she is number one and number five because she has two different horses she's trying to qualify, Selena and Micah. I think it's Micah. So that was a whole article on that. It was good to see, and you can take a look at that at the New York Times, the whole article there, about Reed Kessler trying to be one of the youngest show jumpers ever to represent the United States at the Olympics.
How about horses in the mainstream media today? That's NBC and the New York Times. It doesn't get much better than that. Hey, just to let everybody know, right in about 3 minutes, Karen O'Connor is going to go ahead into the dressage arena with Mandiba to start things off for the two-star at Jersey Fresh. They've got 2 stars and 3 stars this weekend. So good luck to everybody at Jersey Fresh. This is another one, because they have the 3-star, this is another one of the Olympic kind of qualifiers, I guess. I mean, they'll be looking at horses there. So it's going to be an awesome weekend in Jersey, and we'll keep you guys up to date on everything that's been going on. But I guess there was some rain last night. They've been well-groomed, the dressage arena and the warm-up ring, so things are looking good out there. It stopped raining, and only one horse was spun from the jog up, and that was Michael Pollard's horse, Shows Green Hanny, I don't know, but that was the only one. So he's going to ride another horse this weekend as well, named Jude's Law. That's a great name. Jude's Law.
Should we just put a disclaimer at the beginning of every show, maybe record it and just play it at the beginning of every show, that we're not responsible for butchering names during the show, because we do such a terrific job of that.
Yeah, it's. I almost think that from now on we should just own it. Like, let's just pronounce the name however we want and not worry about it. And if anybody says anything, be like, we totally do that on purpose.
That's the way we're pronouncing it, darn it. And we're sticking with it.
Yeah, we're just messing with you guys. Just making sure that you guys know that Michael Pollard Shows Green Hanny was the lone horse spun. And just own it. Chris Stafford is cringing right now, by the way, if she's listening, which she probably isn't, so it doesn't really matter.
Hey, Union Rags is going to skip the Preakness. Did you see that? They're going to go right to the Belmont. Michael Vance said that they'll wait till after the Preakness to decide on a jockey for the Belmont. The trainer would not say it, but there's almost no way Julian Lepardeau. See,
we'll lost be the a little rider. Bit. Julian. Yeah, there's no way Julian Lepereau. Now, I did know that one. So, but
is
we're
it
talking Lepereau? About this. Yeah, Lepereau. I do Lepereau. Think that it's amazing that it's really sad because, you know, they've had a lot of really bad traffic in the last 3 races, and they've all been really big fields. And Phyllis Wyeth, the owner of Union Rags, she is like heartbroken. She thinks that she's ruined his will to win having Union Rags caught in traffic. And they said that the horses can get discouraged, and they really want to have a race that he can open up they think that the Belmont has really big sweeping wide turns, and they think that's going to be really good for his striding. So they're hoping that that's the one. But, like, you guys are running these horses, this horse Union Rags, in fields of 20-plus. You know, you're not going to be able to get him out by himself. So I hope they didn't ruin his well-to-win either. I've never really heard of that, but I guess she's concerned about it.
Well, and, you know, Matt was really – by the way, I just laughed because this chat room is going to be distracting, Jamie, because Robert Dunn just piped in, is Jamie available as a jockey for the Belmont? She's small
Hell
enough.
Yes,
I mean,
no.
She could do it. Should I call Michael Matz and say, I got a jockey for you? She's never ridden a race, but she'd be good.
You know, if the will to win is in question, I would have it. I would have the will. I'm just about 30 pounds too heavy. So do you think I can lose that by not going to the sweat room? don't encourage him, Robert Dunn, please. But yes, Michael Matz sounded really disappointed in the post-race interviews. He called the trip a complete disaster. He said that the horse was so far back and got so much dirt in his face that his eyes looked like little slits by the time it was over. If there was traffic to be found, Union Rags found it. He ran well at the finish but was never really in the race. So he says he was out in the paddock Tuesday. He's looking good. He jogged yesterday. And they're just going to give him a little more time between races.
Probably a good move for that particular horse. And I don't know that we've heard. I heard that there might be 5 or 6 of the horses that finished the Kentucky Derby racing in the Preakness. So it's going to be interesting to see who those flesh out to finally be in the end.
These people.
What?
Yeah, you're right. I can't look at this chat.
What we're talking about, everybody, in case you don't know, is we started a chat room today, and it's available if you go to blogtalkradio.com and click on Horses in the Morning. You'll see the chat room on that page, and we have a few of our regular listeners now have come in and are trying it out, and I'm sure it'll build over the next couple of weeks. So we hope that you can use that, actually, in place of Facebook. Jennifer will keep posting the links that we talk about on Facebook, but it's so hard to have conversations on there, and there definitely is a conversation going on in the chat room right now. So if you want to check it out, head on over there. All right, Jamie,
yeah.
Take your eyes off the chat room. Okay.
Oh, hold on. Yeah, the fact that Sumiko just said, tell Michael Matz about your blue ribbon trophy, Jamie, I'm sure that'll do the trick. Thanks, guys. Yeah, you're right. It's really hard to focus. Okay, I'm not looking at that anymore.
All right, we'll give you time to look at it because it's time for a commercial anyway. Let's take a break, and we'll be right back. Howdy, everybody. Glenn here from the Horse Radio Network, and I'm speaking to Debbie, and we have our Equestrian Collections Product of the Week.
Well, this week, I wanted to remind everybody that Equestrian Collections started out as 1824. We started out in the plus-size rider business, and we still do have plus-size rider clothes. One of the things we have in stock right now is the RJ Classics plus-size show shirts. This is something hard to find, and we have specifically in our store. We have them in different colors. They come in pink, blue, and white. They have the fancy collars, the new kind of snap collars that go across so you don't need the rat catcher. And they've got we've got white ones, and we've got pink ones and blue ones with the print inside the collar and the cuff so that it's very today. I mean, this is not your old-style shirt. This is a today shirt in plus sizes. They're in cool fabric and stretch fabric, and I think our plus-size riders have been looking for these, and they are finally in stock. Please take a look.
Do you know what size they go up to?
Up to 52, and we have up to 52 in stock in some colors. And we also have short sleeve and long sleeve, so we have you covered.
Sounds terrific. Well, you can find all of this at equestriancollections.com. Just search for RJ Classics Ladies Plus Size, and you'll
or
find
go to
options.
The don't forget go to the 1824 collection, and you'll find not only these shirts but many other products for our plus size riders.
Sounds terrific. Equestriancollections.com. Well, today we have part two of our fencing series that we did with Jason from Field Guardian Fencing at fieldguardian.com. And we did the first part last week. This is a four-part series that we are doing to let everybody learn a little bit about fencing. So here is part two. Well, we're back with part two of our fencing series that we're doing here on the Horse Radio Network. And I have Coach Jen here with me, host of the Horse Tip Daily Show. And, of course, I'm Glenn the Geek with the Horses in the Morning Show. Now, Jennifer, anybody that missed part one should go back and take a listen to it because we really established the types of fencing and what we ended up using was the polytape fencing. And we also discussed about how we came about choosing Field Guardian fencing systems as our choice for the fencing we put up at the new world headquarters of the Horse Radio Network here in Ocala, Florida.
Distractingly beautiful world headquarters.
That is true. Jennifer has the most beautiful view out of her studio window. So let's talk about today in part two. Let's talk about laying out the paddocks and talk about obstacles and all of the things that you have to take into consideration when you're putting up fencing. And let's help people do it right the first time so they don't have to make the same mistakes we've made over the years. And I have Jason here, who is the founder and owner of Field Guardian. Hello, Jason.
Hello. How are you doing?
Good. Now, we learned some things doing this. We didn't know that we could get so much help, and I don't know if all the fencing companies are this way, but you guys certainly are. When I said, okay, we need two paddocks, and this is about the acreage, about an acre and a half, and we're going to need probably this number of gates and everything, we didn't know. And then we looked at your website, and we were trying to calculate and figure out all the parts and pieces we needed between the wire and the insulators and all the parts.
A little overwhelming.
It was overwhelming. We just got lost. And then you said, well, you don't do that. You just send it to us, and we figure it out for you. We didn't know that that existed.
That's a nice feature and a nice benefit we try to provide all of our customers. Some customers already know exactly what they want, so we just let them tell us what they need. Others don't have a clue, and one of the best ways for us to help them is for them to sketch out a diagram of what they think they want. If they send that to us, we can get them exactly what they need without getting them too much or too little. And there's nothing worse than getting to that last part of your fence and needing one more widget or two more of these and not having it.
So that is absolutely true.
or my favorite, ordering the wrong part.
Part, yeah.
Yes, you guys fixed that for us because technology has come a long way since we built fencing last, and there are all kinds of bits and parts and speciality things that make it go so smoothly. And had I not sent that diagram to you folks, had I tried to do it myself, I would not have been able to take advantage of all those shortcuts, so to speak, that make the fence look good and go up easier and be safer for my horse. You guys were right on it, and I sent you the diagram, you sent it back and said, this is what you need, and ta-da.
Now, what needs to be on the diagram for people who are thinking about this?
Basically, a layout, their fields, their paddocks, their corrals, just the corners and where they want their wire or tapes to run. And usually we have them mark the corner posts and where they want their gates and where their barn is in reference to where they want to put their charger. We don't tell people how to put their fence up, and our philosophy is, you build your fence the way you want, and we'll get you the stuff that you need to make it to how you want. Some people like to have their gates hot. Some people don't mind not having their gates hot when they're open. And so those are some of the choices we give people, and if we have it laid out how they want, we'll pick the pieces that fit just their needs without having too much left over or not enough when the time comes to put the fence up.
So the more accurate you can make the measurements about the lengths of those stretches in on your fencing, that's the most important thing there.
It is. And sometimes if someone can give us the dimensions of what they want, if they're kind of flexible in what they desire, we can help them maybe change a little bit to limit waste of product. Now, for example, if a person wants a 700-foot run, well, if they're not stuck on 700 feet, if we can make it down 650 or 660, that way we can sell, you know, provide one roll of tape that'll do the entire run perfectly without having waste or any cuts or stoppages or connections down the run. Little things like that, by providing a diagram, help us provide what they need faster and easier. The other thing about it, it helps you as a customer save a whole lot of time. You can spend hours trying to figure out the stuff yourself, and we do it every day, so it's a lot easier for us just to help you get what you need quicker.
And you're probably going to save money because you're not ordering stuff you don't need, which is what you're going to end up doing probably.
That's correct.
Now the gates, where the gates are is important because the number of gates and because that determines what pieces and parts you're going to need. So the number of gates is important. Do you have a recommendation as far as gates are concerned? And I don't mean yet the stuff that used for the gates, but where gates should be and how many there should be in a given paddock?
There's no requirement. I think if people don't have an idea of where to put one, we can help them out as far as logistics and flow of animals. But most times our thought process for gates is you put a gate where you need it. If you want a gate somewhere, put it there. And if it could be better serving the purpose, a few feet one direction or another direction, we'll suggest that. But most people have an idea. They want to bring their truck in from this direction and feed over in this corner. They want it right here. And most times people have a good idea already what they need, so we don't have to help too often locate gates. The one thing we do always ask people is they want their gate hot or not when the fence is open. Or I should say, you want your fence hot when the gate is open. And that's one thing that people don't ever think about is you have a circle or a continuous line of electric fence going up. When you open a gate, that can break the circuit and make the remaining portion of the downstream fence no longer hot. And so
do you solve that?
Using an under gate cable to bring the electricity or the shock, the voltage from one side under the fence and connect to the tape on the other side.
So you actually dig a trench under where the gate would be?
Yes, sir, you do. You dig a trench 6-8 inches deep, you bury the cable, and it comes up on the other side, and it continues the voltage down that remaining part of the fence when the gate is open.
That's also really nice for folks when you open the gate. You're using an electric fence gate. You open it up, and you drop it on the ground. It makes this lovely little ticking noise, which many, many horses are scared of. And by using that method that Jason just told you about, you don't have that problem.
That's correct.
Well, that's interesting. Now, what about gates and corners? I know there's a lot of people that say you should never put your gate in a corner, that it should be in the middle of the run rather than the corner, because when you're bringing your horses in and out and then you got them close to the fence, do you have thoughts on that?
We agree with that as well. And sometimes, depending on if you have a metal gate, a pipe fence gate, when you open it all the way up, it'll touch the fence on the other angle.
Ooh, that's
and
bad.
Short out your fence that way as well. So it's not always
that.
Good to put the fence gate in the corner.
Yeah, I didn't think about that. Now, what options do we have while we're talking about gates? We have the metal fence gate. What are the advantages to using the metal fence gate when you have electric fencing?
People are used to it. They like it. They don't. That metal fence does not get electrified, and so they can touch it. They can climb over right there if they want to. It's simple to use. Though those type of gates require very sturdy corner posts or gate posts on each side of it. A lot of people make their own gates out of the tape or the rope using a gate handle and a connector, or we actually have some kind of interesting gates that retract into the casing that they come in.
So those are the ones we got.
Those
are really nice. They're retractable. They're like,
they're spring-loaded, and they roll themselves up into this little plastic case.
Plastic case, yeah.
Yeah, they're really nice because it just gets them tucked right out of the way. It's lovely.
It's kind of like a tape measure.
Like a tape measure does, right.
And it sucks itself back in. So
yeah.
Now, how about longevity and durability? That's the one thing that came to mind when we first started using those. Are they going to last?
They should. They don't always. Many people extend them out too far, and just like a tape measure, the springs inside wear down and they'll break. And so if you're using them gently as they should be used, they should last quite a while.
You're not really supposed to let them go and let them go zing. That's probably not good.
That's correct as well.
Yeah, your tape measure, you're not supposed to do that either because that'll wear that out too.
And
I know because I've worn a few tape measures out.
I can see a bunch of 9-year-old boys out at the ranch.
Having fun with that one. Mine can go in quicker than yours.
Zing!
So that's one option that we used. And do you recommend, now, how many strands do you recommend of the poly tape or poly rope?
At least 3, usually. Some people choose 4. It all depends upon the look that they want. Most horses only need 1 or 2.
Right.
And usually toward the upper part of the fence. The two-strand fence kind of looks funny, so people often tend for three or four if they want to have a more of a split rail type looking fence. Some cattle farms, actually, I mean, you don't talk about cows here, but some cattle farms only use one strand of wire.
That never worked for our cows.
No, our cows always got out.
Yeah. But some places do.
We need 12 wires for our cows.
That's why we don't have cows anymore.
Jennifer was so concerned that when I first met her way back in early horse husband days that I was going to grow attached to the cows and we weren't going to be able to butcher the cows. After they got out a few thousand times and we were chasing them around the 100-acre farm, I was ready to shoot them in the field. I was so sick of those cows after a period of time. Well, we wouldn't have to worry about that if they had a tape fence back then.
Yeah, they didn't have it back then.
So we actually put four on ours. We did end up doing four, and part of the reason that we ended up doing four is our fence is dual purpose. Not only does it hold Beaker, our quarter horse, in, we also use it to run our greyhounds. So that's the area where we take our greyhound. Greyhounds can't be let loose because they go 35 miles an hour and they're gone. So we need a fenced in place to run her, and we just put that extra bottom one on there as a visual barrier for our greyhound. So, and it's been working out beautifully. She loves it out there.
Oh, that's great.
So there's something that probably you've never used your fence for before, was running greyhound.
Never have.
It'll probably be the only time, too.
Now, there's one other thing we should cover in this part, and that's posts. What types of posts can you use for the poly tape or the poly rope?
You can use traditional T-posts, wood posts that are either round or square, or you can use temporary plastic or poly posts. Any type of post that you have will work with it. It all depends on the type of insulator that you use to connect your poly product to whatever type of post you have. So if you have a T-post with rope, we have certain insulators that work on T-posts that work for rope. If you have T-posts with a poly tape that's 2 inches wide, we have different insulators that work for that application. And so we have corner post insulators for wood and corner post insulators for T-post, for tape and for rope. And so we have a lot of flexibility in the joining of your wire product with your post.
You recommended to us that we should go, especially down here in the sandy, loose soil that we have in Florida, you recommended that we should go with wooden posts in the corners, and we concreted those in, and then also wooden posts at the gates, which is what we ended up doing, and then everywhere else we used the green T-posts. Digging down here was so easy, it was unbelievable in the sand compared to what we were used to in Pennsylvania in the shale, where we'd get one post in a day if we were lucky. But we found that we really like having the wooden posts in the corners as those solid anchors.
That makes a much sturdier fence, and you can pull off of it. And it's just a good practice to have good solid corner posts, because making corners with whatever type of wire product you're going to use, it has a tendency to pull in. And if you don't reinforce that corner T-post, you'll have problems with it eventually.
It's got a little spring to it, doesn't it?
Very
yeah.
Strong fence.
Yeah.
Now, one other thing about the posts, the wooden posts, is we were told down here that apparently, and I'm sure this is true everywhere, with the weather down here being so hot and humid, is if you use the square wooden posts, they tend to warp and twist. And people right down here all tend to use the round wooden posts. Do you find that to be the case in all areas of the country? Or
it all depends on the climates and humidity factors and heaves from frost and everything. So different places use different posts. And in Ocala, that's a very common factor is the heat. And so round posts usually do a little better than wood posts as far as not warping or bending.
Yeah, the square ones tend to do that. And even when we looked at them in the piles at the store, those square ones tended to be a little twisted.
That's correct.
Yeah. So we did end up going with the round ones. Jennifer, was there anything else that we wanted to cover in this section about the layout? And I just can't reiterate enough. Send them accurate measurements. Tell them what kind of posts you're using in the corners and then the stretches. And they will just put together what you need. It just made it so easy.
It's wonderful one stop, because you can surf around that website. There are options like crazy. So regardless of what kind of post you need to use, wood square, wood round, metal posts, temporary posts for dividing large fields, they've got all the little bits and parts to make that happen. So if you just draw up a drawing, label what you want, the folks over at Field Guardian just say, okay, this is your best scenario, this is what we would recommend. Does that work for you? And they work with you if there's like, because at one point there was something we decided to change before we got our parts in. We just called them on the phone and said, hey, can we try this way instead of that way? They talked me through it. Oh, that's going to be a good option for you guys. They adjusted what we needed, and it worked out beautifully. So it's all about communicating, and they're really friendly people, so that's easy to do.
Well, the next segment we're going to do here, Jason, coming up, is about the tape and is about actually building the thing and some of the things we ran into. Plus, we want to talk about chargers. Chargers are an important part of an electric fence, and there's some options with chargers as well. So we're going to get into that in just in the next segment. So we'll be back with that shortly. Thank you so much, Jason. It's fieldguardian.com, fieldguardian.com. Well, we're back here at Horses in the Morning. I am Glenn the Geek here with Jamie Jennings and Coach Jen. We'll do that next segment next week. Well, Jamie, the chat room is having a lot of fun at your expense this morning, but Susan Nelson has come in with some helpful information on Facebook about your baby bird issue. Jamie, if you didn't hear the beginning of the show, had a haboob battle over Phoenix, and the baby bird lost. So the haboobs came in, they battled over Phoenix, crazy wacky winds, and the bird fell out of the nest, and she has a baby bird with a broken leg. And you say it's a grackle?
It's a grackle, which is a little black bird, so black and brown.
Something like out of a horror movie? Didn't they used to have horror movies, or grackles in horror movies? Like
probably.
The birds.
The way this thing screams at me for being so little is pretty impressive.
You know what's going to happen? You're going to feed it one day, and then it's going to poke your eyes out. That's what's going to happen, because this is a horror movie bird. That's what you're saying right there.
I'm kind of scared of it, because it's so, its beak is, like, super huge and pointy, so I've been taking tweezers and using them like chopsticks and beating the bird that way, because I'll hold the bird, because I can grab the bird, but I don't want it to bite my fingers.
Susan says, I did wildlife rehab for 20 years in California. Broken leg means a bird can't perch right or hunt. Grackles are meat eaters like crows and ravens, but they like fruit too. So we know you're a vegetarian. You probably don't have a lot of meat around, but if you have some fruit, apparently they'll like fruit too.
Well, what I want to know, does that mean that this bird is going to, like, die the second I put it out there because it can't perch? Is it a captivity bird from now on, or will its leg heal and it'll be fine? I mean, what's the deal? So give me a follow-up. I don't know what to do. But
I still have the best idea. Frank's hungry. Sits out there on that roof every day surveying the property, waiting for a baby grackle to fall on the ground. And you stole his lunch.
You know, I would give Frank credit for that if my cat wasn't absolutely worthless. And I really think that if a baby bird fell out of the nest, Frank would be scared of it, honestly. Like, he's not the hunting type. However,
Robert Dunn says maybe you can make him a little splint out of something.
I tried. I got toothpicks and I got...
No,
you
didn't.
Oh my God, I totally did. And I got some sheet cotton, and I went to the vet wrap, and I opened a new thing of vet wrap, and I cut these tiny little vet wrap strips so I could wrap it around. But it's like right on the joint, so I can't wrap it. I tried the splint thing. If it was a clean break, Robert, I would have totally had it done. And trust me, trying to convince my husband to hold the baby bird while I was going to bandage its leg last night was the hardest part of the whole thing. Just put it back outside. Just put it back. I'm like, this thing will die in this house before I just throw it out there and let it blow away in the haboob and scream in its heart. Poor little thing. He's like, you're not going to save it. I'm like, well, you know what? I'm not going to, like, what did I say to him? He's like, you're not going to save it. I go, well, then it's going to die in my arms.
Let me ask you, though, I got to get back to the haboob thing, and not just because of the name. But when they come, most of us have not lived through a haboob. When they come in, is the wind ahead of the big sandstorm, or does the wind come in and then the sand come and then the wind dies, or does the wind stay for a while after it gets completely dark like the world's ending? What happens?
It's the weirdest thing. All of a sudden, Yeah, have you seen the movie The Neverending Story? We talked about this before, and I don't think you watched it. But
no, but
it's
I saw the one of the other one where they were in the desert there, Hidalgo, where the sandstorm is called.
Yeah, they don't move that fast. Like, you don't have to outrun them because they move a little bit slower, but the wind inside it is amazing. So all of a sudden, the wind, you can see the sky getting black from the other side of the city. Phoenix is very flat, so you can see it coming forever away. And it's all of a sudden just black. It looks like storm clouds coming in. And then you realize that the storm cloud is dirt brown and goes all the way to the ground. And the wind starts picking up, and then the wind gets more and more, and then boom, you just get hit with all the dust. I was actually walking in my backyard trying to get the horses in, and I had shorts on, and the dirt from the wind whipping around, I had my Crocs on because I didn't plan on going out back with the horses, but I had to get the chickens up and everything, and the dirt that was blowing around was hitting me in the ankles so much that I have like little, almost little abrasions on my legs from the wind being so fast and whipping the sand around. It's crazy. It was crazy. But then it's like blackness and wind and craziness, and we lost tree branches, and then it's just gone. It just moves through. It's weird.
And then it gets light again, and everything's fine, except for the 10 inches of dust over everything?
Oh, my gosh. My pool is disgusting. It is disgusting.
Well, it must be days after that goes through that the filters to clean out the crap and to get in your pool again.
Yeah, that's why I have a husband.
Poor guy. He has to clean the pool. He has to help get the chickens up. He has to help split baby bird's legs. This guy should be sainted. And he lives with that girl whose horses get loose at horse shows.
We're the perfect couple. Or at least somebody had to be put up with me.
Hey, we have a song for you today, and then we're going to come back with Charles, and we can hear Jamie just gush all over the phone. Now, I hope you need to focus. You need to think. You need to concentrate so that you can get through this interview without, like, having a meltdown, okay? Just saying.
I'm under control. This is the one part of my life that I think I have under control. That's a lie. I'm going to be a mess. But it's cool. I'm going to try to be a respectable journalist.
Okay, yeah, you try that. This song coming up is Love is a Rose by Templeton Thompson off of her I See Blue Heart CD. We haven't heard this one before. Of course, this was a Linda Ronstadt song. Shania Twain also sang it. So Love is a Rose.
Love is a rose, but you better not pick it. Only grows when it's on the vine. Handful of thorns and you know you miss it. Lose your love when you say the word mine. I wanna see what's never been seen. I wanna live that age old dream. Come on boy, let's go together. Let's take the best right now. Take the best right now. No.
That's Love is a Rose by Templeton Thompson off of her Icy Blue Heart CD. You can find all of Templeton's music at templetonthompson.com.
I love that song. That was awesome.
I don't even remember
Shania Twain doing it.
Yeah, I remember her version. I don't remember the Linda Ronstadt version, but I remember the Shania Twain version. But I love that. It's one of her better ones, I think.
I like that one. Yeah, that was good. Well, this whole chat room thing has been an epic failure, a bust. I don't want to look at it ever again. We need to stop this ridiculousness.
It seems that the favorite target in the chat room seems to be Jamie and all her idiosyncrasies.
You know, it's now, you know, you just say, you can.
I guess I'm going to say, though, some of it was leveled at me earlier when my brother came into the chat room, proceeded to tell everybody that I got flagged last night at the restaurant at Jennifer's birthday party because I drank too much and was a little silly. That came up.
Yeah. So Glenn, if Glenn has more than two sips of a strawberry daiquiri, he's hammered. So what did you drink last night?
I forget what it was called. It was not a Long Island iced tea, but it was a different kind of iced tea. And let me tell you what, it had like four kinds of alcohol in it, and it came in this huge glass, and it was two for one night, so I got like two of them. And she had, halfway through the second one, she just took it away. And then she wouldn't let me have it back. She's mean. My wife is mean.
Were you the arguing drunk? First of all, who gets drunk off two drinks? Nobody but you. Bless your heart, you're a cheap date. Gotta love it.
That's right. No,
you know what?
I am not an arguing drunk. I just plead with my eyes and, you know, tried to get to the other side of the table to get my drink back, but that didn't work either. But I was in there with my father-in-law, by the way, who's visiting, because he also had several drinks, and we were both, we both couldn't drive home. Let's put it that way.
Well, we've got our next guest on the line, and when it comes to drinking and all that, he knows nothing about any of that. He's as pure as the driven snow. And that is Charles Campbell from Lanes End Farm. Welcome. Good morning, Charles.
Guys, how you doing?
We're doing great. You would never drink too much, would you?
Unfortunately, the opportunity never comes around where I have enough time off to ever do anything like that.
Of course not. How are things over at Lanes End right now?
They're good. I just got finished with the vet round this morning. Checked another mare in foal. So that's 100 mares in foal and counting days on 36. So we're slowly progressing through them. So hopefully not too many more weeks now.
Now, how many horses did you guys foal out this year?
Well, including the eight we've got left, we're down a few from last year. I think we have 136 to foal out.
With eight left to go, 136. Yeah, you're right. You don't have time to even have a beer.
No. Well, I mean, I managed to have one the other night. I went out for a bit of dinner with some friends. So I can understand how Glenn feels. One of the girls I went to dinner with got ever so slightly intoxicated off about three drinks.
Don't you sit there and tell lies, okay? I'm sure it was you.
I'm not going to drop you in it, Jamie, but I think you just did yourself.
I don't know what you're talking about, man. But let's move on. So what is a day in the life of one Charles Campbell? With all these horses and all these things, I know you start really early in the morning. What's a day in the life like?
I'm pretty busy at the moment. I started this morning teething at 5 o'clock in the morning. I like to get the teething done when the mares are all quiet in the barn before the staff get there, because as soon as the staff arrive, they know it's time to go out in the field, time to go in their paddocks, and they get a little bit excited about that. So to really watch these mares when they're at their most relaxed, I do it in the morning before anyone arrives. So the vet comes about 6:30 in the morning, so I get the teething done before that. Then the vet arrives, go through, and on a typical day we'll have anywhere from 25 to 45 horses on the vet list. At the moment we're sort of short cycling a few to get them bred, a lot of fetal sexing going on, and then the vet work's usually done around 10:30, 11, nip to the office, check in with the boss, make sure there's nothing too pressing going on, and then just checking all the horses, getting around all the foals from the night before, foals are already born, just making sure there are no problems, any sick ones, checking on them. And then confirmation exams in the afternoon, check each horse, make sure they're progressing and they're correct in their limbs. If any need to be scheduled for a screw or something like that, you know, we do those. And just basically going around all the barns and touching base with all my barn foremen and making sure everyone's happy.
Now, I think you mentioned something about fetal sexing. Is that a practice that's done most of the time now?
Our owners fetal sex because they'll sell some and they'll keep some, so it helps at the sales if you have a fetal sex, because a lot of buyers nowadays are specifically looking for a mare carrying something by a certain stallion. So in that regard, it helps. And our owners like to know what their mares are carrying. But a lot of places don't do it. It's an added expense. And some people just like to find out when the foal is born.
So this begs the question, Charles. Did the Mosses want to know what Zenyatta was having, or was it a secret?
No, they don't fetal sex any of theirs.
No kidding.
So, yeah, they just have a scan at 60 days to make sure everything is healthy, and that's it.
So when it came out as a boy, everybody was totally surprised and excited. Nobody knew.
Nobody knew. No.
That is so cool. So since you brought him up, how is the little guy?
He's doing very well. He's doing very well. He's out in the field as we speak, playing with Spooky Minister, his paddock buddy.
And how's Zenyatta doing?
Doing very well, very well. As I'd imagine a lot of your fans know, that we checked her in foal a couple of days ago, which is a big relief, a bit of pressure relief there. So glad that she's doing well.
How much more pressure is there dealing with this mare and this colt on a daily basis than before she was there?
Not a whole lot. I mean, you get pressure from not the fans, but because she's such an important mare, there's obviously a little bit more pressure, but she's so relaxed and takes care of herself and keeps out of trouble that there's no added pressure. With these mares that we have on the farm, they're all being bred to top quality stallions, so there's pressure there anyway to make sure they're being bred at the right time, because you can't go back for a double with a lot of these top stallions because their books are full. So we're used to having exceptional mares, and this one's just, you know, a little bit more exceptional with the fact that she's got such a huge fan base, and she captured the hearts of so many people while she was racing.
Yeah, obviously. And so when she, you said she's, you know, does everything kind of by the book, was that how the foaling went? Was it, because we haven't talked to you since the baby was born, and was it a nice quiet one? Was there television crews and cameras there? How'd that go?
It went very well. It couldn't have gone any better, in fact. We foaled five earlier on in that evening. We had six in total that night, which is a lot of work anyway. And she broke water whilst eating hay still. The Mosses were there, Mike, the farm manager, Bill Farish, three of the top vets you could ever ask for, Dr. Martinez, Dr. Holder, and Dr. Sprayberry, were on hand just to check both mother and baby over after it was all done. And when she finished foaling, she had a resting heart rate, which is incredible. She took it all in a stride and just lay there afterwards licking the foal, and the bond was instant between her and the foal. There was none of this sort of maiden mare where they're like, oh gosh, who's this in my stall? It was just perfect. Couldn't have been happier.
She seems like she's taken to this whole thing very well and couldn't be more relaxed about anything. And I did get to watch the video of her, and there was a video that was posted on Facebook and then on her blog that said that the little colt was quite a handful. Is that true?
He is. He's a big boy. You know, Bernardini throws a really good sized foal, and coming out of Zenyatta, who's obviously a large lady, he's a big boy, and he's a little character. He likes to play with the people in the barn, and he doesn't quite know how strong he is. Yeah.
Now, when and this may be a ridiculous question because you're probably not going to answer it, but do you guys cringe every time he runs? Like, because the video, he's flying around that paddock and he like hits the fence and just barely makes a left turn, you know, to keep from running into the fence, and he just is so fractious out there. Do you guys just cringe and want to bubble wrap him?
I cringe when every horse gallops towards the fence. But he's just like his mum. When she first arrived, she galloped flat out across the paddock, knew exactly where the fence line was, and stopped perfectly. You know, it's good for them to gallop around. The compression helps form bone. So I like the fact he gallops around and he's happy. It shows, A, that he likes to run, and B, that, you know, he's settled where he is. But you always worry. You know, there's just that split second where you're like, you could have stopped about a meter shorter there. But no, he's very intelligent, so he's got a good role model in his mother.
I was going to say, how is she as a mother?
Excellent. I mean, she's kind and gentle with the other foal that's in the paddock, never pins her ears back at him, and you just couldn't ask her any more.
Now, is there something that when you look at this colt, sorry, Glenn, that kind of sets him apart from any other one, or is he just kind of one of the gang?
At the moment, at this young age, they're still developing and filling out into their bodies and their frames. So at this young age, it's difficult. You can see ones that sort of enjoy running and are more active, and you see the ones that are more relaxed and like to sleep more. And he's definitely on the more active list. He loves, as you can tell by the video, he's very squealing when he's galloping around his paddock. You know, he loves to be active and going at 100 miles an hour. So in that respect, he looks like he'll enjoy the life on the track.
Now, Charles, you not just specifically with Zenyatta's baby, but with any of them, as they progress here, will you start playing with them more, working with them more, handling them more? How's that progression go to the point where they head off to the training track?
The guys, got to mention the guys in the barn. I've got the best staff you could ever ask for, and they handle these foals, take care of these foals day in, day out, and that's what's key to these foals' development, is at a young age, getting them to trust humans and understand that everything we do is in their best interests. And they're already having their feet picked. At about a week old, we'll start handling their feet. We run our hands down their legs every day when they come in from the paddock to check for bumps and bruises. So they get used to us handling their legs, which is an integral part of the racetrack. Any good trainer will be feeling his horse's legs twice a day. We'll groom them, give them a quick brush off and things like that. They just get them ready for the next stage in life. So when they leave me as weanlings and they go to yearling size, they're fully ready to expect.
That's
so
nice.
When will they wean all of the babies? When do you guys do it all at the same time, or is it an individualized thing with each mare?
No, they get weaned at 5 months. When they're 5 months old, we'll begin to wean them. And that's how we do all of them, slowly throughout the year. We find that's the best time to wean them, because they're just starting to get a bit too much for the mares. They're so large, and they're just a little bit too rough for the mares. So by the time it gets to 5 months, most of the mares are sort of relieved to see them go.
And so is there a certain process? I can't blame them. Get this baby out of here. But is there what's the process? Do you just pack them up, or do you start to move paddocks? How does it work?
We there's many different ways to do it. The way we find best is we bring them all, they're all out at night by that stage, bring them in the morning, just like normal, and then just walk the mares out the barn to, thankfully we've got such a large farm, we walk them to a field and leave the foals in the barn, and then after lunch we tranquilize the foals a little bit to keep them quiet, turn them all out, and it's surprising how little they even notice, because they've become so dependent. They don't know them, you know, don't really mind that their mother's gone. They play with their buddies and, oh, well, we're alone now. And it's not too bad, and the mares are relieved. They go and graze in the field.
Huh.
That's awesome. That's what a nice, smooth way to do it. So you said you've foaled out that many horses. How many horses and how many mares did you have to get back in foal? And who keeps track of all of that?
We've got 174 mares on the farm at the moment to get back in foal. So we'll still be breeding for another couple of weeks. But we have a computer database that I have a little palm top computer I take around all of that work, put in all the palps when I want to recheck them, when I want to breed them. And that syncs itself when I go to the office. It goes automatically to the owners so they can see what's going on. Goes straight to our billing department so that mare's billed for a palp or a culture that day. And then I phone Louise, she's one of the secretaries in the office, tell her when I'd like to book the mare. She phones up the farm where the stallion stands and says, I'd like to book this mare for, you know, the 11th. And then we have a big vet book, big leather binder, and it's like the Bible to the farm. If the office burned down, that would be the one thing that had to be saved, because that has the records of every single mare, has everything written down when we've checked them, fetal sexings, 28-day checks, 35-day checks. And every day Mike will go through that and make the vet list for the next day, or if Mike's away, I'll do it. And that's how we keep track of everything.
There's a big book, Amy. They use a book.
Yeah, it's a big leather binder we had made, and each mare has a sort of A4 size piece of card in there, and on the front it has a sort of little calendar, and you put an EX for an examine, and then on the back it has a description of all the work we did that day.
Did you say you also keep track of it on like an iPad or Palm Pilot or something?
Yeah, I've got a little motion computer, about the same size as an iPad. The program isn't on the iPad at the moment, so we use these, but they're incredible. I can pull up the history of every mare on this farm, farrier work, vet work, vaccinations, when she was bred, her pedigree, her owners. It's like a little office that I can carry around with me.
Is that also where you log onto your Facebook and tell me to stop messaging you?
I do that off my iPhone, yeah.
Okay.
You know, if she gets to
alone.
Be a problem, you can just call me. I'll give you my number, and I'll make her stop, okay?
Thanks, Glenn. I might use that in a couple of weeks, yeah.
Well, you know, speaking of Zenyatta and harassing you a little bit, I think I've been pretty darn good this year. I do want to know, though, they've found out that she's now in foal to the horse Tappet. And what made them pick Tappet as the baby daddy?
That's a good question, and that's not one I can really sort of answer. I manage the broodmares. I have very little saying who they get bred to. The Mosses and Dottie Sheriffs and David and Gordo and Mike Klein all sort of sit down and go through stallions, and that's how they decide who they'll breed her to.
I mean, because I, you know, in my own personal opinion, you can let them know I think they made a very good choice.
he's a very good stallion and throws a very nice foal as well, so it's exciting.
Yeah, when are they going to name the baby?
No idea, honestly. Maybe when it's a yearling, maybe when it's a two-year-old. Who knows?
Well, do they wait that long? It's not like humans, huh, where they pop out and they have the name ready. They can wait that long, or they usually do wait that long to name?
Yeah, you can wait until they're a two-year-old. You'll sometimes see in the TDN horses breathing, and it'll be the mare's name, and the year they were born, they've still not been named.
Huh. Okay.
Well, I've got some suggestions and ideas, so I'll go ahead and send those in another Facebook message to you. So you can pass that on, okay?
Yeah, I'm sure he will. Here's my stalker suggestions for your name.
Listen, look, logging onto Zenyatta.com, I have realized, Charles, that I am nowhere near as bad as some of these other people, because there's like a whole community of people that don't even know each other, that talk to each other on Zenyatta.com, and they've made friends because of this blog that they do every single day.
Yeah, I think it's brilliant. I really do. You know, the more people we can bring together and generate interest in racing and discuss racing and horses, I think it's fantastic that they're able to do that, and that she's just bringing all these people together in one place.
I agree. Do they have the laptop set up in her stall, or do they, because, I mean, it, she's writing it, obviously, so do they just have to take her into the office to write it?
Yeah, she has her own little iPad she plays around on.
Okay. That's what I thought. That's what I wanted to hear. Well, Charles, thank you so much for being on the show with us. Please give her a big kiss on the nose for me and pet the baby and keep us updated.
I will do. Thank you guys for having me on again. It's been great fun.
All right. Thanks, Charles.
Oh, I'm sure. Get back to work.
Take care. Will do. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Can you give me his phone number then, so I could text him my number? So if you start to be too annoying, he has an out without calling the police.
If I had his phone number, Glenn, I would totally give it to you. But unfortunately, they don't let me have that kind of privileged information. So I actually just contact him on, like I said, Facebook.
That's funny. Well, that was great. It's so good to hear about, the little babies. Because when you live in Lexington or even down here in Ocala, every place we drive, all these big farms or little farms down here actually have babies everywhere. And it's so cool to hear. And I'm sure every barn does it a little bit differently, too, with the babies.
You know what's really awesome is I can't stop smiling, and I'm going to be in the best mood all day long. I'm so excited. That was awesome.
Yeah, that's great. Well, thank you, Jamie, for stalking Charles long enough to get him to agree to come on and do that.
Uh-huh. That's what I do.
Now, let me go back a little bit, though, because you were picking on me before Charles came on about my being a lightweight. I think that he was probably referring to you when he was saying that he had dinner with somebody the other night that was a lightweight.
I don't know what you're talking about, Glenn. That's nothing. Yeah, no. And I definitely did not stay out till 1 o'clock in the morning going from pub to pub in downtown Lexington. I was with my husband, people. Okay?
Yes, I can vouch for that because I do know your husband was along, so I can vouch for that.
Yeah. He was there. So it was fun. Well, I what else can I say? This whole chat room thing is starting to people have been pretty good. They've cleaned up their act a little bit, okay?
You're too sensitive. You cannot look at the chat room. You are way too sensitive to have a chat room going during the show. There's no way. As somebody said in the chat room earlier, she cries at that drop of a hat. So I'm just going to have to prohibit you from looking at it. You're going to be banned from the chat room, Jamie. Besides, then you won't see what I'm posting about you.
Well, I don't want to see. But thanks, Rick, for saying he really enjoyed Charles' comments about how a thoroughbred breeding farm works, a behind-the-scenes look. Exactly. That's what I like about it. And, he's just got so much responsibility, and I know he won't say it, but to have that mare and that baby there, and I'm sure the pressure of getting her in foal again, and I mean, that's the stuff that most people would lose sleep over, and he seems to handle it very well. So the Lane's End staff is just awesome. And I did find out too, when I was in Lexington, Glenn, that, we talked about Three Chimneys doing the horse of the like post life on the racetrack deal where they take horses and they rehome them. Lane's End also has the same thing. And I'm going to get the information. We're going to talk to somebody about that soon because apparently they send them to a trainer up in Canada, all the Lane's End horses, because they want to take responsibility for the horses that they breed as well. So I'm going to try to find out a little more about that and get somebody on to talk to us about it because to give back like that is something that everybody needs to do, and we need to highlight the people that are actually doing it.
Terrific. Well, that's it for today's show. We'll be back again tomorrow. Don't forget, tomorrow is Freestyle Friday. So it is time for Really Bad Ads. Get your Really Bad Ad in to Jennifer at horseradionetwork.com. We're giving away to the winner Dr. Rose's Remedies gift pack, drrosesremedies.com. That'll be available tomorrow. I don't know who our guest is tomorrow, but I'm sure we'll have something fun.
Yeah, you know, we'll see. We might not have any fun at all, Glenn. Who knows?
Yeah, that's true. That's true. But the chat room will be here. Give it a try. Thank you for everybody who stopped by. And we hope that we can build the number of people in there, and it gets more fun as time goes on. And, Jamie, you're prohibited. You're just not allowed in anymore. That's just the way it's going to be.
Yeah, I can't do it.
You can't handle it.
No, well,
you
hey.
You're too weak.
I got it. Speaking of being weepy and stupid, I've got to go put a baby bird back in its nest. So I've got to go.
Is that what you're going to do? Have you decided now officially?
Well, I really think that it would not be fair to ask Jose to feed a baby bird for 2 weeks while I'm in Spain.
It's probably true. Poor Jose. Jose has it just as bad as your dad or your husband does. It's not worse.
Yeah, he gets the brunt of it because I'm not there to help him. I'm much like I do most of it without Chad, but Jose is. He does it all. So, yeah, we're going to go. So, anyway, thank you so much for Charles for joining us. Have a great day. Spay, neuter, and geld, people.
I have another.
Woo-hoo.
It was true last night, too.
Girl power.
He wouldn't let me have another last night.